Yes. Then, during the time that I was in jail, I was visited by officials, some of the officials of the union. And it was then I learned that I would not have my job when I returned, and that the danger of the that 18 of the organizers would be out, organizers and other staff people would be ousted was very great, and that they were fighting for their existence. And this was due to the fact that the AFL-CIO the AFL-CIO had decided that we were a very valuable asset. Local 6 had almost 30,000 members with a checkoff in the hotel, which meant that they had an enormous treasury fund, and they decided they would step in and take over. The decision of whether since this had been a left-wing organized union, the decision as to whether people should continue depended largely on whether they were willing to accept AFL leadership with its anti-communist stance, and when they were willing to declare themselves as opposed to communism. This, of course, occurred with Jay Rubin, who was the head of the Hotel Trade Council, and with Gertrude Lane, who was his wife and was secretary of Local 6. But others did not wish to take that position. So the secretary of the union, quite a number of the business agents that helped to found the union, the editor of the newspaper, the educational director, a number of the people on staff who were in charge of bookkeeping and so on, all of these people were ousted.
While you were in jail or after you came out?
While I was in jail, mm-hmm. The last month while I was in jail. And so when I came out to a union that had been already split, where there was great hostility on the part of those who were taking over. They did not even pay me my vacation. They gave me you see, I was entitled to a month's vacation. They didn't pay me for that. They didn't pay, give me any severance pay. I asked for it, they didn't give it to me. And the general mood was one of enormous hostility. This was not true of the workers, though.
Mm-hmm.
The workers were still very friendly and very, very supportive. But it was the atmosphere in the union. So, of course, when I came out of jail, I was without a job, without a connection. And the whole McCarthy era had started, and all the unions that had been organized by the left wing, the left wingers who had done such marvelous work at getting them organized, are now under attack.
And how about your husband and daughter? Were they supportive?
Well, in order to prevent any trauma on my daughter's part, I sent her off before I went to jail. She had just finished her freshman year at Radcliffe. And I felt that it would have, and she had been with me through the trial and so on, and I felt that it would have an adverse effect on her emotionally and otherwise if she stayed through. If she stayed here during the period of my incarceration. So I arranged with some friends for her to go to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
She spent the entire summer in Europe. And it was a wonderful experience for her. She could shake off this terrible situation in which we were besieged by reporters there were press reports, and there was a constant strain and tension in the family. And I think it was a good thing that we did that. My husband, of course, stood by as I would want to expect him to do. And
he had a job during this time.
Yes, he was still working. And it's very interesting that the Columbia faculty in his department supported me.
Mm-hmm.
They came to him and said, "We're very proud of your wife. We think she took an admirable stand against that house committee."
Mm-hmm.
That was, and he was very heartened by that,
mm-hmm.
because he felt surely that he would be the man of God, and of course he was a God later. I think it's important to mention one or two things. Prior to my incarceration, the union through the education department had planned an annual dance. We used to have an annual dance for the members. And it was the night before I was to go to Washington. It was coincidental. It was coincidental. Mm-hmm. It was not anything I had planned. The people in the union already knew that we would have to go. And so they organized a march from the union to the dance hall, which was on 30, I think it was at Manhattan Center. And they marched down the street, and they brought me roses, and they sang, and they were all through the dance. They were with me, you see. And following the dance, they went with me to the train, so that to Washington. We were taking a late train, a midnight train to Washington. And so my husband came along, and they walked with me to Grand Central Station and gave me a send-off.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very beautiful experience, I must say. I issued a statement at that time, which I want to put into the record. I said, I do not wish to be in contempt of Congress, nor do I feel guilty of such contempt. I believe that the conduct of the Joint Anti-Fascist Refugee Committee is that of a humanitarian relief agency completely in harmony with the democratic principles for which millions died in the recent war. I cannot believe that it is un-American to aid refugees from tyranny and oppression. In fact, it is in the best American tradition. By investigating the refugee group, the House Un-American Activities Committee was trying to destroy its work and thereby interfere with its constitutional rights. This would endanger any organization, including the trade unions themselves. Workers would do well to note that every member of the House Committee voted for the Taft-Hartley law, for the destruction of OPA, and for the lifting of rent control. As a good American, I believe it is my duty and responsibility to prevent in whatever way I can the attempt of the House Un-American Activities Committee to destroy our constitutional liberties. Of course, one of the basic purposes of the whole affair was to obtain information about the refugees that we were aiding so that Franco would be able to persecute the families of these refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, was one of the major reasons why they wanted to get out our books and records.
Did the party support people during this time?
The daily worker supported the campaign. And of course, Varsky was very strongly supported by all kinds of publicity.
Yeah, because I know the Rosenbergs didn't think that they got very good support by
did.
The party, but
they
you
did.
Did.
But we did.
You
yes.
really did.
We did, yes. There was no question about that.
Uh-huh.
They supported us. Now, this is a story by PM on us.
Mm.
And there was a beautiful letter in the paper by I.S. Stone. Now, this is John Howard Lawson's letter to Bernard, in which he mentions me. And this was an ad in PM after our trial. See, the Thomas Rankin Un-American Committee must go. See, that was in PM.
Continue.
The success of the government in alienating people by fear was evident in the following. Before we left the jail in June, there was a mass meeting in which 3,000 people were present. When we returned in September, we were given a welcoming party, and there were approximately 50 people present. Well, this is something else. This was a dinner that was held 1948, you see. We were already...
Charlotte has papers from this whole period that she's looking at to recall.
Yeah. All right. There is also a commentary on the situation in the trade union that Michael Obermeyer, who was my oldest and best friend in the local union, and who had been responsible for my coming into the union as an educational director, was very unsympathetic to my refusal to give the books and records. Several people in the higher echelons of the union who were ready to now make their peace with the AFL had suggested that I do what two other members of the committee had done, namely say that if I had the books and records in my possession, I would give them, which I refused to do. Obermeyer felt that I was wrong. On the other hand, he himself was in grave trouble. There were deportation proceedings against him because when he arrived in this country in the 20s, he had said that he was not a communist and was therefore given committed to remain as a permanent resident. But when he applied for citizenship papers in 38, he had said, also that he was not a communist, but they had evidently some evidence to prove that he was, or at least there were some, there were informers who said he was, so that he was now being indicted for perjury and deportation. The sad result of his life was that he was convicted of perjury, that he spent more than a year in an American jail and was later deported and died in the Madeira Islands with his family, around him, after wandering over the face of Europe without any job or anything constructive to do. It has been said that the Hotel Trades Council, headed by Jay Rubin, who had decided to make a peace with the AFL, had sent him sufficient funds to live on, because it was Jay Rubin's policy that he followed in connection with the entire trial of perjury and so on. And according to a number of lawyers, a great many very serious legal mistakes were made that caused this terrible end of his life.